show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Bouncing ball, Moustakas, fair ball. Sets, throws, Royals win it. Kansas City, you've got a World Series.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Ladies and gentlemen, we have some things to discuss in Royal Land here on this show, as we always do, but today in particular, as it will be the show where normally these are much more common in seasons of Royals past, but this is the first true one this year. We're gonna have to talk you guys off the ledge here. We're gonna have to bring you down from that ledge, my friend, and tell you why the Royals season is not over and you should not give up your playoff ticket deposit. Now, before we do that, the introductions, of course. I am your host, Jeff Herr. With me, the unbreakable Michael Engel, who is 1 year older and 1 year wiser as of yesterday. Is that right?
Yep, as of yesterday.
Happy birthday to my co-host, Mike. Happy birthday, Mike. How are you doing on this, your birthday week?
Pretty good. It was a pretty good weekend other than the baseball results, but everything else was pretty good. So I don't know. Maybe that mojo threw everything off because obviously how things happen in my personal life is how the Royals play on the field. Like,
you know, naturally.
It's always connected.
If you're like me, you can't have too many things going right at the same time. The world has to find some way.
Right.
Kind of
to keep you humble.
Bring you down a peg.
Yep.
So exactly. if the worst of that is that the Royals lose a few games, I think I can handle it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, they've won a lot too, so
they have won a lot. Which is reason number one. If we're gonna have numbered reasons, which
we can. I have a pen and paper.
You certainly can. I always trust you to have a pen and paper, Mike.
It's an analog world, and I'm just living in it.
It is, indeed. But yeah, Royals have won a lot of games. So if you want reason number one, the Royals have won 82 games, guaranteeing themselves three straight winning seasons. I meant to check this out, and I completely forgot until now. So we're going to go really quick here.
The last time they did that?
Yeah, the last time
they had. I think it was 87, 88, and 89, I think.
87, 88, 89. That sounds right. But
reasonably sure it is. But yeah, let's go take
all right,
a look.
Let's take a look here. Okay, so let's see. They had.
Well, we know they didn't have one until, you know, after 2003, they didn't have one until 2013. So,
right.
You can wipe out that entire swath right there.
At least 10 years, yeah. And then the last winning record before that was the strike year.
Yeah.
Right? So at least 20 years, 21 years, they've gone. But let's get the exact number here. Their first, once they became good in 73, their first losing season after that was a strike-shortened 81 season. And then let's see, they had two.
Well, 80, yeah, I think
they had three straight 87, 88, yep, 87, 88, 89. They were 83 and 79 and 87, 84 and 77 and 88, and 92 and 70 and 89.
They were pretty close in 93, 94, 95, but 95, they were four games under. So,
yes, in also strike shortened season, 94 and 95, both strike shortened.
Yep.
So yeah, that's it, man. So it has been, 26 years since they've had back to back to back winning seasons. And
yeah,
here we are. So when I was 4 years old, was the last time this feat was accomplished. And now here I am, a 30-year-old man, and I'm witnessing history, also of which the Royals could have, let's see, there's 25 games left in the season. So if the Royals, yeah. Is that right? My math right?
Yep.
37. Yeah, 25. So if the Royals were to go 18-7, which has been done before by the Royals,
they could do it.
Then they could win 100 games for only the second time in franchise history, unless they go on a Blue Jays-like tear. The best record in franchise history is pretty much out the window
probably
at this point. But that's okay because they lost the ALCS last year. And as we know, anytime a record is repeated by a team 37 years later, the same fate is guaranteed. So this is actually a good thing. They're going to be paving new territory with a new win total that'll be the second most in team history. So yeah, lots of wins, positive number one.
Yep.
And then let's talk positive number two. So the Royals have, they're on a 4-game losing streak right now.
Right. But only had, their third of the year.
Right.
Mind you.
Yes. And they've, so, which is part of my point where they had two such 4-game losing streaks earlier in the season. From May 24th to May 27th, they lost 4 games, and they scored 5 runs and gave up 29 in that stretch. And that was the start of a 2-9 stretch, after which they snapped out of and won 8 out of 10. Their second 4-game losing streak.
And that first losing streak was also against the Cardinals and the Yankees.
Yes.
In New York.
Important. Important.
So, I mean, those are good teams.
They are very good teams.
Not bad.
Second 4-game losing streak, June 29th to July 2nd, scored 6 runs and only allowed 18. So losing some closer games, but still, you know, getting handled. And that was in the middle of a 1-5 stretch, followed up by a run where they won 17 of 23 games. So they put another 17 and 6 run together, they'd be really close to getting those 100 wins. Yeah. So now we've got the Royals in a 4-game losing streak, bearing in mind that they won 9 of 12 before this streak, and they scored 27 runs just in the 2 games preceding these 4 games. And in the 4-game losing streak, they've scored 9 runs while allowing 31. So they've allowed more than any other 4-game streak, but they've also scored. So, you know, and when you look at those 2 games before scoring 27 runs and then the 9 of 12 stretch before, offensively speaking, the Royals seem to be operating at a near peak status, you know, before and even, you know, partly into this unfortunate stretch of losses here. But putting all that together, what are your thoughts on everything? State of the Royals, everything is burning down, Mike. Save it. Throw some water on this for me.
I get the frustration. Like I'm I was at the game last night and it was just frustrating. There was a certain point in the game where you did feel like, hey, they're not going to win this game, but you look at the season at a whole, and that's what you have to do. It's a long season, and it's a long season by design because the game can be so quirky sometimes where players can have bad stretches. Teams can have bad stretches. Every team has had a losing streak of 4 games this year. Every single team. You know, the best team in baseball history lost a third of their games or something like that. I don't know the exact number, but, I mean, they lost games. You're going to lose games. You're not going to win every single one of them. While it's frustrating, you know, you have to kind of look at how things are going. I get in this case that it might be more frustrating because Alex Gordon is back in the lineup. The Royals have acquired Ben Zobrist. It's September, so there's just, you know, a little bit of heightened anxiety. Johnny Cueto has not been pitching well. A lot of guys haven't been pitching well. I mean, like you said, 31 runs allowed in the last 4 games. That's not good. Though one of those was a 12-run game, so it's not like they're getting blistered. You know, it's an average of about 8 runs per game, and it is a little bit inflated by that one game. You know, still seven runs in the other games, but, you know, that's at least kind of reasonable, reachable, I guess. I don't know. But it, all in all, you know, it's like we kind of made it bullet point number one. The Royals are a team that won 82 games. So they've been good enough to this point to win 82 games, which is more than everybody in the National League except for the Cardinals and everybody in the American League. So it's clear they're a good team. I mean, we've seen it on the field that they're a good team. They've been able to win with rough pitching stretches. You know, Danny Duffy had a terrible May. Jeremy Guthrie was a number five starter for most of the season. You know, Yordan Ventura had some rough stretches. They had Chris Young, who was both a Cinderella and a pumpkin. And Joe Blanton started some games. And so you go through this team that for most of the year, up until they got Johnny Cueto, didn't really have an ace pitcher. And they were still, you know, they've been in first place since well early in the season. I think it was June. Is June 9th was when they took possession of first place again, and they haven't given it up since. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at 3 months in a week where they've been in first place without even looking back. I mean, Alex Gordon got hurt, and all that happened was they extended their lead even more. So I don't see where the angst that's building up on Facebook and on Twitter that is like it's all going to crap. Like, people are expecting not everybody, grant you, but you know, a large amount of people are like freaking out, like this is the end of the world, and it's clearly not. I mean, the Royals have bounced back from bad streaks before, as you've noted in you know what you dug up on the schedule. They've come back before, and they've come back pretty strong when that's happened. I think it's just one of those things that, you know, early in the year, everybody was kind of hot at the same time. Early June, everybody kind of got cold at the same time. And then you kind of had this stretch where three guys would be really hot pretty much from, you know, middle of June on. And then a new group of three guys would be really hot. And you had points where Danny Duffy looked really, really strong, but you had times where he didn't. But when he didn't, other guys looked good. So I think as a team, you got to look at the big picture, and that's what I think a lot of people are losing. And I also don't think that most of the people who are complaining or crying or losing their minds are really feeling like that. I think it's so much that it's just in the moment because, you know, you're watching the game and it gets frustrating. But, you know, you still have to keep the perspective that it's a long season. And one, the Royals have an almost impossibly insurmountable lead in their division. The smallest magic number in baseball right now, as Dave Lesky has pointed out on Twitter and in a column. It's, you know, the Twins are the only contender, and the Twins really aren't scary at all. There's, you know, only 25 games left, and they have to make up 11 games on the Royals. So the collapse that would be necessary for that, you know, even if the Royals, you know, lost 7 and only won 18, the Twins would still have to go through and could only lose 5 games. You know, so it's just like the circumstances that would lead to the Royals not winning the division at this point are ridiculous. And even if they didn't win the division, they'd still be in the hunt for a wild card anyway. So, I mean, that's why their percentages are 100% on any of those projections for making the playoffs. So that is my general feeling on like why you can't go crazy. I mean, it's a long game. If it was the NFL, yeah, you don't want a 4-game losing streak. The NBA, yeah, you don't want a 4-game losing streak. But you get 162 of these. You know, they play 13 games in a 2-week period most of the time. You know, you're going to have stretches where, you know, you don't get the hits. You look at the Chicago series, they were swinging the bats pretty well, but it was right at guys or guys made plays. And then, you know, there were just certain times where the Royals didn't necessarily make the plays that you normally would expect them to play or to make. So you take everything together and you have to figure, well, for most of the year, we've watched a first place team that looked like they were completely in control of the Central. I mean, for half the season, they've been in first place, and you're going to take 4 games as more meaningful than that. It doesn't make sense logically. And I think people get that, but at the same time, I think there's still other people who just cannot help but feel frightened by what could absolutely go wrong. So, I think it's a little silly, but, I guess everybody can be a fan in their own way.
Yeah. You know, I mean, there's, it kind of, I get it a little, you know, to a certain extent, because, you know, Royals past history and all that. But, you know, there's still, it's interesting because it's one of those, we have to, as we talked about at the top of the show, three straight winning seasons, you know, so this isn't like, hey, you know, the Royals are, you know, the cute story and all that kind of stuff. The Royals are a good baseball team and we should start being fans as such, which is part of that is, you know, and this is not necessarily calling out fans or anything like that, but there is a, you know, a kind of, there's been a culture shift in the Royals organization. There needs to be a culture shift among the fans. And I think a lot of it has taken place, but every once in a while you see it kind of slipping back from a fan perspective of, oh my God, it's all doom and gloom and it's all over and all
same
that kind
old
of
Royals.
Stuff. And, you know, that's just, it's just not really accurate because, you know, as you said, it's a long season. There's lots of things that can happen. And, you know, yeah, you know, you don't want to be on a huge losing streak or anything going into the playoffs, but the playoffs don't start tomorrow. Like I said at the top of the show, they got 25 games to figure it out. And if they go, you know, 15-10 in the next 25 or something like, you know, 16-9, 7 to something, you know, like that, pretty solid, you know, win percentage, you're going to feel pretty good. You know, if they go 15-10 to end the season and they have 97 wins and all that. So, you know, it's, and right now, I think a lot of it kind of stems from, you know, people seeing the Blue Jays doing so well.
Right.
And people being scared of playing the Blue Jays in the playoffs, which, you know, is understandable.
Fair.
They're a good team. But all
the teams are good teams. I mean, last year, the Angels were a good team. The Orioles were a good team. And the A's were a good team.
And that's the thing. Like, you just can't, you can't go in. Like, there's never been any team, like the Blue Jays kind of scare
World
me.
Without playing a good team.
Absolutely. And yeah, so the Blue Jays kind of, it's not like when, you know, a few years ago, it was like 2009 or 2010, I think, when the Seattle Seahawks were 7-9 and made the playoffs and, you know, they even won a game, but still that's not the kind of thing that's happening here. Like you said, and like Leske has said, you're going to play a good team no matter what. That's the whole point. It's the playoffs. You got to get through the best to be the best. And the Royals did it last year.
The man. That's what it is.
Yeah. And last year, nobody expected the Royals to do it and to get through the gauntlet of you know, the Angels, who had Mike Trout and Albert Pujols and everybody else, and they were the best team in baseball, and nobody could beat them, especially not the Royals, and sweep. And then, you know, the Baltimore had been to the playoffs, you know, the season before. They had more experience than the Royals, and Buck Showalter's a genius, and Ned Yost is an idiot, and they got swept. And, you know, and then the tide kind of turned a little bit and everyone was like, oh, you know, I think the Giants kind of lucked in and I think the Royals got this locked up. They got home field and then that didn't happen either. So, you know, it's baseball. And part of what that whole discussion is, hey, the playoffs are a little bit different than not a little bit different, quite a bit different,
quite different
than regular season baseball, you know? So it's really good to go in hot, and typically teams that go into the playoffs hot stay that way. But all the same, you know, you wouldn't think that what the Blue Jays are doing now is sustainable in a playoff format, simply because, and it's like, we've, you know, kind of the mantra we've repeated on this show about how October baseball is different than, you know, July, August, September baseball. 'Cause it is, you know, especially now, you got a lot of those teams, like the Blue Jays, who, you know, they're racking up lots of stats and whatnot. But there's also, you know, a lot of teams that the Blue Jays are playing and that everybody's playing have a lot of call-ups, a lot of, you know, a lot of, lesser experienced players that they're going up against that, you know, quite frankly, make it easy. And if you're, I mean, the Royals, they'll be the, you know, first ones to probably admit that, you know, the end of their schedule is really easy.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't even know if they have a winning team the rest of the way besides Minnesota. Off the top of my head, I'd have to look at it again. But
I don't think that they do. I think for a long time it was just Baltimore and Minnesota were the only teams left that were there. I mean, they still go to Baltimore, so that would be one. But other than that, they play the Twins three games at the end. And if the Twins are still above 500 at that point, well, then, yeah, that'll be – that leaves them with two games against the Twins right now and three more against the Twins. And then – so they've got, you know, 17 games against teams that aren't playing 500 ball.
Yeah. And then, you know, the Blue Jays –
oh, there's one more against the Cubs, too, the makeup game.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That well, only
– okay.
I guess it counts, whatever.
Right.
But and then the Blue Jays, you know, similar kind of deal. They only play the Yankees and the Orioles, but they play many more games than that. So they, you know, against those teams, I should say, they've got six against the Yankees, three away, three at home, and then four against Baltimore. So that's 10 games remaining from theirs that are against teams with winning records. And then actually,
only half a game under.
Yeah.
Oh, and actually, the Orioles are under 500 now too because they went on a huge skid.
Oh, are they? Okay, Tampa Bay, are they still under 500? I know they were.
They
close.
Are as well. Yeah. So
okay. So never mind.
And that changes math a little bit, but still.
Yeah. So New York's the only team that they'll play, just like Minnesota's the only team the Royals will play.
Yeah.
But you also, you know, I mean, the Blue Jays. I mean, you look at the teams that they've beaten in their streak. You know, recently. Like, you know, they've beaten, you know, Oakland. They kind of started it with the Royals at the end of July, taking three out of four.
The Royals, the ball falls the right way in a couple of those games. The Royals take three out of four and
at least split.
Yeah.
And they win, you know, if they would have the game they lost 7-6 in the 11th
Cueto
inning,
game
walk off. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, had they held on and won that game when Cueto left, they were up 6-3. Had they held on and won that game, then they split that series at 2-2. They win the season series against the Blue Jays at 4-3. And while not much actually changes, the perception of Royals v. Blue Jays changes quite a bit.
Yep.
You know, so that's how fickle these things are, and that's baseball. But, you know, then you look at Toronto's, the rest of Toronto's schedule, you know, Minnesota, we know that they're playing above, you know, ahead of their skis. They're not exactly the, you know, a huge juggernaut right now. You know, the Yankees, solid, you know, getting a sweep from them. But then, you know, Oakland's not very good. Philadelphia's not very good. The Angels are in a terrible place right now. They've just been dying the whole time. You know, the Rangers have been doing better. But they're, you know, still a step below. And then you got Detroit, Cleveland, Baltimore, all teams below 500, all underperforming this year. So, you know, yeah, I mean, if you really want to break down, you know, team like Toronto versus, you know, what the Royals, I mean, they've played a pretty easy schedule just like the Royals had. And they're doing what they need to do, which is take care of business against those lesser teams, just like the Royals have done, you know, with the exception of this recent skid. But even so, I mean, the Blue Jays just got hammered 11-4 by Boston last night.
Yeah.
So,
and 10-2 a couple of days before that against Baltimore.
So. Exactly. You know, and they've had their fair share of, I mean, their losses, if you look back in the streak, there's not very many of them, which is good for them.
Right.
But, you know, when you look at them, you know, a lot of them, like they gave up seven runs to the Royals, seven runs to the Phillies, who are not very good. You know, and then, like we said, 11 runs last night, 10 runs a few nights before, you know, four in a couple games. And, you know, last time they played the Yankees, they lost two out of three. So it'll be really interesting to see. You know, I think best case scenario right now, you got to think with six games against the Yankees, if the Yankees can tilt that 4-2 in their favor, being down a half a game, you know, that puts them up game and a half, the Yankees, assuming all else is equal to that point. And then you're looking at a Blue Jays, Rangers, wild card playoff, and then you know, theoretically the Blue Jays could be eliminated right then and there. But if not, then David Price is most likely starting that game, so then you avoid David Price.
Yep.
Going into the series and the division series, and then you know last time they played, You know, R.A. Dickey and Mark Burley had some solid games, and you know, they've kind of stepped up their game ever since Price has arrived. But you know, all the same,
Burley was pitching yesterday, and
he got shelled pretty hard.
Yep.
So they're, you know, they have their warts as well, and their and all that. So I guess the overall overarching point, if you will, is, you know, it looks bleak right now, but you know, there's all things considered, the Royals are in really, really good position.
They really are. I mean, they've got four games on Toronto. Toronto's got, you know, a couple more games in Boston. They've got games against New York. New York is not going to hold back against them in any of those games. You might have Tampa, who, you know, want to finish off strong, and they've got a couple of series against those. It just seems like the talent level is probably greater than, you know, what the Royals will face. So I, you know, Toronto's no lock to keep storming back. They, you know, have more games on the road than they do at home, and they
finish with seven on the road.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's going to be, I mean, if that offense can carry them very far, but you also see, like, when they lose, they're getting 2, 3, 4 runs a game. They're immortal offense, when they lose. And they're just arcade game offense when they win. So if you can handle them, well, that's, you know, that's kind of what it comes down to. And going back to the point you made about Price, I mean, that's what one of the things that that Leske wrote up in his thing on Pine Tar Press is that, you know, that's a big part of being able to be in that home field advantage spot, that number one spot, because you face the wild card and you don't have to face that ace in game one. You know, that way, if it is the Rangers and Blue Jays, you get Cole Hamels out as well and David Price. And so whoever wins, you're probably not facing their ace until game three. And by then it may be too late. You know, you still got a chance to win that game. Plus, you might have two games on them. And that goes for, you know, anybody. You know, it could be the Astros, could be, you know, whomever the team in question is. You get to burn their ace. It's just like when the Royals went to L.A. and they didn't have James Shields. You know, they didn't.
Yep.
It already pitched.
And that was considered a big time disadvantage.
Yeah.
For the Royals going into that series. And one of the reasons why, you know, one of the many reasons why many predicted them to lose.
Yeah. And so that's a huge advantage if they can get to that point. But it always goes back to, you know, the feeling of if the Royals play 500 baseball from now on, and I think I brought this up two shows in a row now. You know, what the Blue Jays would have to do to overtake them. And at this stage in the game, if the Royals go, let's say, 13-12, you know, that gets them 95 wins. Well, the Blue Jays have to win 17 games to get to 95 wins, you know, 17-8. They can do that. But, you know, considering who they're facing, you know, that means they probably have to sweep New York in one of those. And that's going to be difficult to do.
They'd have to go most likely 5-1 against New York, probably.
Yeah. So I.
So what? What if that were to happen? What's the tiebreaker? Do you know? I don't even know baseball tiebreakers that well. They're so infrequent. But
I would bet it's head to head.
Think so?
I think so. I mean, it makes sense. It's the logical way to go. Which would, you know, that would be unfortunate because the Royals obviously did not win the season series, but. I just don't think it's going to come to that. And no. I think that that's where a lot of maybe the more reasonable hand-wringing is coming from is that, okay, well, we know we're going to get the division, but we might not get, you know, the first overall seed, which, okay, and you do want a home field advantage. And I think with Toronto, you do want to avoid their home field. But it's also just not, it's, you know, it's not a guarantee. The Royals went to the World Series and they started on the road in both series. So it's not like it's a guarantee just because you play at home. Another thing to keep in mind is that, one, the Royals right now, they have been playing a suboptimal lineup. They've been trying to, you know, work Alex Gordon back somewhat slowly. You know, Greg Holland is not pitched in so many games. Mike Moustakas had a hamstring issue that he needed to get cleared up. Kelvin Herrera wasn't available because of chicken pox.
Of all things.
Go figure. You know, so they haven't been going at full
Alex
strength.
Alex Rios.
Well, I mean,
although some would say that's right, a benefit, that's, but that, you that know, all the same, me. That decreases your depth. So then, you know, you do lose some options later in games when maybe it could make a difference if, you know, you want to pinch hit Jerod Dyson for somebody, but he's already out there playing because Rios sitting out there. So, you know, while maybe it nets the Royals a benefit, decreasing the depth is a factor.
And I think I don't remember who said it or who pointed it out, but I don't think there was a lineup that has had Zobrist, Gordon, Kane, Hosmer, Moustakas, Morales, maybe Perez was included, where it had all of those together. You know, because the Royals haven't had to do that. They've been putting Orlando in there. They've been playing, you know, Christian Colon got a start at short at some point. You know, they're just kind of mixing and matching and keeping guys fresh. But the other thing is Ned Yost said he's not going to do that anymore until they have the division clinched. So that's one thing. You know, they've been playing September basically, you know, allowing themselves to get those guys rested up, which I think could be a benefit later on. And they've also started shuffling things. They're not just sitting back and waiting for the end of the month. They're changing things up. Tonight, Ben Zobrist is leading off, which when he was acquired, people were like elated because it felt like he would be a good candidate to lead off or hit second. Alex Gordon's hitting second. Alcides Escobar, who has been the leadoff hitter since about this time last season, is hitting ninth. And so they have adjusted and they're going with the full strength lineup right now. So that also puts, you know, your best defenders out on the field. It, you know, takes Omar Infante out of the lineup. It, you know, moves, it limits the number of at bats that Escobar is going to have. And he's been really, really bad for the last month and a half. So that's an adjustment that they've made that should improve on the field. I mean, they're 2-5 in September because they've been playing, you know, half their guys. You know, they're basically putting out half a lineup. You know, not to say anything bad about guys like Orlando and Colon and Chesler, Cuthbert and things like that, but I mean, they're not putting their number one team out there. And no. They know they're not doing that because their idea is that they want to be fresh at the end of the month and in October and in the playoffs, and they don't want some kind of weird nagging injury to be bothering Lorenzo Cain or Mike Moustakas or whomever. And so I think that's going to be a benefit too, as they kind of get back in the lane and kind of hit the gas and try to finish it off. And, you know, with five games left against the Twins, and if the Royals win three of those, that's six off the magic number right there. So, I mean, it could be pretty quick. They could win the next two games against the Twins here, and they start up with, you know, a magic number of nine with 23 games to go. And then you can kind of start to worry about Toronto. But, you know, it, I don't think any of that is anything that people should be worrying about. I think it's an unusual place of comfort for the Royals to be in. And I'm not sure. I mean, obviously the fan base has kind of wigged out a little bit on it. Losing games, it's within reason. Yeah. You don't want to be, you don't want to be like, well, okay, well, we'll get them next time. But, you know, you got to look at everything. This has been a really good team. You look at their lineup. They have, you know, five or six guys who are, you know, easily well above average in their performance. And even a guy like Perez, who doesn't have much of an OBP, is still slugging enough to stay up there in the ranks of catchers offensively. I mean, he's got 19 and holds.
He's batting seventh.
Right. So it's like you're minimizing the outs he might make.
Yes. And
putting huge guys in front of him.
And two, you know, a few differences between this team and Royals of year past. First of all, not only have the Royals, they've had the two previous four-game losing streaks, but those are the only four-game – those are the longest losing streaks they've had. The season was four games. So, you know, previously in seasons past, those four-game losing streaks turn into 6, 8, 12 game losing streaks. You know, this team has been good enough.
1-8 stretches and more than one team, a year.
this team has been good enough to put a stop to those. And they had that 2-9 stretch, which was, you know, their worst of the year, but they were able to come out of that and go 17-6 in their next 23 games, you know? So they've been able to, you know, have their hires be much high and their lowers be much high than in years past. And also, as you mentioned, not, you know, this lineup as we have, this was the first time they've all hit together. But I mean, you think about what the Royals have been able to accomplish with what they've been through this season. I mean, you start with Rios getting hurt first week of the season after he had a really good first week. You know, people were really excited for what he was going to do. And then he gets hurt. And, you know, maybe that hand injury has been nagging him this whole season, whatever. We'll probably
and
never know.
He had a wrist and thumb injury last year, I think.
Yeah. Which is apparently sapped a lot of his production.
He has no power. I mean, you look at him hit the ball and it looks like it's coming off the bat well, and then it's finishing well.
It's routine.
Yeah, it's just dead. So, it's easy to see how that injury would hurt him.
Yeah. And you had that, and you had Holland was injured for a good amount of time this year. Wade Davis had some issues with his back. You know, Hochaver coming back from Tommy John has had to figure some things out. Medlin coming from Tommy John has had to figure some things out. Chris Young, you know, having to deal with his workload more than he is typically probably used to.
Ryan Madsen just came back after
Madsen,
two weeks.
Yep.
Other guys fighting back from injury, and Chris Medlin
Moose has
to work back.
Yep, Moose has had some issues. You know, Lorenzo Cain has missed a game here or there. You know, Gordon's been out for a couple months now, and you know, all these things have contributed to Vargas having Tommy John, and you know, all these things have contributed to the what could have been a, you know,
a
ready-made excuses.
Season.
Yeah, ready-made excuses for the Royals too. Like, you look at the Rangers last year, and you look at them 2 years ago and they made the playoffs, and then you look at them this year and they're on the verge of making the playoffs. And last year they were pretty poor, and that was it though. They did have a ton of injuries, and that's what people always said were the excuses. And so it seemed like the Royals kind of had that ready made, but they didn't falter. They didn't need the excuses. They were able to overcome, which is just so impressive when you really look back and think, like, when was the last time you remember the Royals were like 100% healthy, where everybody was on the roster card, and everybody who was on the roster card was playing at 100%. You know, I can't think of it. Even tonight with this roster, Gordon's still coming back. You know, he's still not getting his full workload. You know, they're trying to bring him back slowly and smartly. So, you know, there's definitely this is just a different team than we're used to seeing.
Yeah. I think there was something last year. There was some, I mean, you know, it's a whole new experience of being a team that's in the playoff hunt and in a playoff position that some people were like, well, we just don't know how to handle a winning team. We don't know how to be a winning fan base. And I kind of shrugged that off because I don't think, who cares, you know, and it, to a certain extent, like, oh, big deal. But at the same time, it's like, there is something to that, you know, where you do have to kind of understand that four games don't change your season until October, you know, if they lose four games in October, well, we're, you know, we're talking about next year, but
yeah, so justifiable. Yes.
But right now, no, it doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't make a big deal. It's not something that we need to freak out about. Meanwhile, as I'm not watching the game, but I'm looking on game day, and the Royals just loaded the bases.
Yeah,
and Eric Hosmer just cleared them with a double. So seems like maybe maybe we can dial it back down after tonight. So hopefully that's the case. And then, you know, but there's still going to be naysayers. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. And I think we'll, you know what, we'll forego. Oh, make it 4-0. Morales just doubled. Anyway,
right.
I think we'll forego a break and just kind of try and end with a short segment here. But
all right,
you know, as we've just spent the last 30 or 40 minutes trying to convince you to come take a step back off the ledge. You know, I do think there are some things to keep an eye on, if you will. Number one being Johnny Cueto.
Yep.
So let's talk about this, Mike. We've got Johnny Cueto, one of arguably over the last 4 years, one of the top 5-10 pitchers in baseball. Would you disagree with me on that?
Top five, yeah. Top five easily. Well, yeah, easily. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, there you go. If not top five, slam dunk top 10.
Yeah.
So we'll take that.
Definite in our ace discussion. Yes. Definitely an ace.
From previous year, yes. Right. Absolutely. So he, you know, looking back, and I mentioned this previously after he'd had a couple bad starts, I think it was three bad starts our last show, that he had never had a three-game stretch like that since 2011.
Yeah.
So as of yesterday, it's now, I'm sorry, 2 days ago, it's now four games, four right. starts in a row for him that have been poor. He's given up four runs in two of them and six runs in two of them. Is that right? Just off the top of my head.
I don't have it in front of me, but yeah, I mean, they've been rough starts.
Yeah. And he only four 2 days ago and six in the previous two. I knew that, but.
Yeah, and like, you know, not pitching full games. You know, you figure he's going to be a guy who's going to throw seven innings every night. And he's throwing, you know, the other day he threw three, you know, three innings, five innings, six innings. You know, it's disappointing. So obviously.
Yeah. So the question is, what's the deal, Mike? I mean, there have been rumors the last few years of the injury, possible injuries to Cueto, either, you know, current or coming, and, you know, some issues with his arm, dead arm type of things. I personally am not a subscriber to those rumors, because you look at the things that usually indicate some sort of mm-hmm. of injury or discomfort, velocity dipping, lack of movement on a lot of his pitches, things like that. And those aren't things that you really see when you watch him in person. But all the same, that only goes so far because the results still aren't there. I mean, what do you make of all this?
Yeah, I think it's easy to just say he's hurt, but, you know, the velocity, release points, those things are all consistent with what he's been all year, what he's been most of the time in his career, with what he was since joining the Royals. And, I think if there's anything, he seems to miss a little bit more, like he misses his spots. So I think the command's not completely there. The Royals felt like there was a mechanical problem that was causing him to fly open. And so, you know, you lose control and command that way, which would make sense. But if you also look at things like where the pitches that are getting hit, I mean, I've seen a number of different articles where they're looking at basically stills of where the ball is being hit. In a lot of cases, it's a ball that's not even in the zone. Like, they're just hitting a ball that's trying to, you know, get outside that you kind of want them to chase, and it either bloops in or they happen to make good contact. The best example of this is a pitch he threw to Jonathan Schoop of the Orioles three starts ago, I think. It's like this little curveball, and it's probably 6 inches inside, and it's at under his kneecaps. I mean, it's a ball. This is, you know, ball, and Schoop hits it about 450 feet. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, you don't expect anybody to hit that. I don't know how he hit it that far. You know, but I don't know if that, I don't know what that means. I don't think that's something they wanted him to be swinging at, but it wasn't even really like a hanging breaking ball or anything. It's not, you know, like, it's not a ball that you typically see hit out of the park, much less as far as it went. So that's kind of weird. And you also have a lot of bloopers that kind of fall in. That game in Boston, the defense was, they were just having issues as well. It's also four starts in a row. And the book on Cueto has been that he's difficult to hit. His batting average against is very low throughout his career, and especially over the last few years. And he's given up, you know, 8-9 hits a game in five, six innings. And that's not getting it done. But the strikeouts are still kind of there, and he's not walking guys. So, you know, a lot of the kind of underlying things are kind of okay, but I think mostly it comes down to he's missing spots. There's a lot of talk about his cutter and some of the things that have happened with that. And in the last four starts, it's the average against the cutter is much worse than normal. So it might just be he just doesn't have the feel for that right now, or doesn't feel confident, or is getting himself in a position where it's too easy to pick it up. And that may be all it is. It may be a simple adjustment. I mean, we've seen Dave Island get Danny Duffy right for the most part. He had a good stretch after coming back from the DL. Jordano Ventura had a number of really good starts. Last night's wasn't great, but he's getting the ball past guys now. He's got a high strikeout rate in his last five starts. I think it's just going to be one adjustment, and you're going to see Cueto back to normal. But mm-hmm. I also thought that after two starts. So, it's kind of similar to like the experience of watching Greg Holland, where he'll have one of those bad outings. And the next time he comes out, you feel a little apprehensive about it. And then he, you know, burns through a lineup
with
six pitches. Yeah. You're like, okay, well, I still feel a little weird, but I feel better. And we haven't seen that example from Cueto to start to feel a little better yet. So hopefully that's the next time out. But, until then, I think you still have to lean on an entire career's worth of performance. Unless there is an injury, which would change things. But I just don't think... it just doesn't seem like, the red flags are there that are usually there for an injury.
Mm-hmm. And, his previous four games, which would encompass his entire time as a Royal so far, let's see, 30 innings, he only gave up 6 earned runs, including 1 earned run in his previous 17 before that game that you mentioned against Boston. Where he gave up 6. So, he's got his past history, and he's even got, this year. And then if you even go back, and say those four games, and then go back further, 5 games, go back to even go back and make it an even 10, then he's only given up 14 runs. And how many innings is this? Let's pull. So let's see if I can. Then you're talking 14 runs in 70 innings from his previous 10 games. So 1.8 ERA. So the previous 10 games before this, he was every bit as advertised the ace that everyone thought he was. And mm-hmm. yeah, so I'm inclined to agree with you in terms of injury, and I'm not certain. What they like you mentioned, the Royals said they figured out, they knew what the mechanical issue was, or at least they presented it like they knew what the mechanical issue was.
Right.
But if that's the case, they have not done a good job of, or at least Cueto has not done a good job of implementing whatever fix that they want. So, maybe it's something where, the Royals are suggesting he fix something in a way that, he hasn't done before, and he's not used to, and so he's trying to work out the kinks or something like that. Maybe he's trying to, kind of change how he throws a pitch. Maybe that cutter, that's what he's trying to do and change on it. But it's something – I read something where he was normally inducing a swing and miss strike like 23% of the time on the cutter or something to that. These are just numbers I'm trying to remember. But and then now it's down to like 17 or 16%. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a big drop.
Yeah.
Quite a big drop there just in mid season like that. And yeah, I think I read a similar article, if not the same one, about how, pitches just like they're not meant to be strikes, and these people are hitting them, and they're hitting them to get hits. And even his last start, there was one where, I was out of town, so I couldn't watch, but I kind of peeked on Twitter, and there was somebody, said, I can't remember who it was, but just, a ball that was way out of the zone, and somebody, they hit it, and it's just like, well, what the hell are you going to do?
Yeah.
So
a lot of times you get the ball that you kind of want, the little pop up or something like that. And it just,
it's
not, the result doesn't work out, but if you get that same pitch in that same spot 4 out of 5 times, it's going to be an out. Mm-hmm. And that one time it falls in.
Yeah. And I'm more concerned than I would like to be about Johnny Cueto, considering what we thought we were getting and what we, you know, especially after four games, what it looked like we had.
Yeah. It looked incredible after that shutout, but, and he followed it up with almost another shutout.
Yeah. But that said, you know, like you mentioned, I will trust history and the numbers and Dave Island, who's, you know, been shown to be a very good,
it's kind of a wizard. Even.
Yeah. So, you know, I'll trust that. And, you know, we've got 25 games exactly. So, you know,
he's probably got four or five starts yeah,
for Cueto to get this thing figured out. And, you know, I think that should be enough time. And I mean, he seemed, just from the eye test, from what I've seen, like I said, I haven't been able to watch, you know, especially his most recent start because I was out of town. But from the stuff I've seen, you can kind of see him. It feels almost like Ventura earlier in the season, where, you know, he seems to be doing fine and he just kind of, something happens and it just kind of gets away from him.
Yeah.
And it's usually just, you know, an inning, maybe spills over into the early part of the next inning, but then he kind of settles down. Like two starts ago, I think.
Yeah, he settled down his last three or four innings. And he was pretty okay.
Yep. And then so it was like, okay, well, maybe he can roll that into the next one, and it didn't happen. But so, yeah, I'm definitely more concerned than I want to admit to myself, but I will defer to past history on him, because I do think that he's the kind of pitcher who's going to be able to get it together and be right for when they need him the most.
The last thing I think I'll say on the Cueto thing, here's a pitcher last season through four starts. This guy threw 24.1 innings, gave up 20 runs, 35 hits, 7 walks. You know, so he allowed almost 2 runners per inning over this 4-start stretch. And that pitcher's name was Madison Bumgarner. And he got it sorted out and was fine the rest of the way. So not that his example is always going to,
not that Cueto's going to be World Series MVP.
It's not going to work out exactly the same, but it just goes to show that some pitchers are going to have bad stretches. And you just kind of have to deal with that and figure that a lot of times they're going to get it back together. And I think Cueto is the kind of guy who has so much talent and experience being that top guy that I think he'll get it figured out.
Yeah. And, you know, you talk about pitchers figuring it out. And at this point, talk about Cueto's struggles, but part of the reason that people have been kind of inching closer to that metaphorical ledge is not only Johnny Cueto, but we're now at a point as of Tuesday night, September 8th, when we're recording this, depending on when you're listening to it, where the last turn through the rotation for all starters, this is the first time we've seen all 5 starters just go out and lay an egg.
Yeah.
You know, the last, even after 4 really, really sharp starts from Ventura yesterday, he had a bad game. And Volquez's last start, who's been the most consistent pitcher, he had a poor game. Duffy had a rough outing. Medlin had his worst outing yet as a Royal. So, you know, I think when you combine all that with a 4-game losing streak, then things start to look bad. But, you know, you got to remember, Medlin's still working a lot of stuff out. You know, it's always hard to...
fifth starter on. But yeah, I mean, we talked about last week who might be that fourth starter, and mm-hmm. I think it's still possibly a good shot at Medlin, but you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be. So it's like those are guys that you don't, you don't have to worry about them that much.
Yeah, and you have less confidence of something like this because of the injury history to Tommy Johns and all that. But, you know, coming back from an injury, typically, and with someone like Medlin, especially coming back from his last Tommy John, you know, he's going to trend upward, not back down. You know? Mm-hmm. So he might have some bumps up.
When he does trend downward, it'll just be a stop.
Yeah, it's not. it's not a harbinger of just a fall. It's a hiccup, and you know, he'll continue escalating forward. And with Medlin, I think the real goal is to get him used to starting, and then, you know, hopefully, like, he'll definitely be on the playoff roster, because I think he'll probably be valuable as either a long man or a starter, depending on what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the real goal for them is they want him to be ready and sharp for next year, so he can fill that. You know, he's not as good as Cueto, although, you know, when he was at his peak, he actually kind of was.
He's pretty cutting good, yeah.
But, you know, no one would expect him to be Cueto, but to fill that role as much as possible. And maybe you get lucky, like a Volquez Shields situation, and you can kind of, you know, basically get similar production. With all that, you know, I'm not worried about. He's had a few hiccups this year, and that's just kind of who he's been his entire career. He's a number three pitcher. That's what he is. That's what happens with number three pitchers. And then Ventura, based on his previous few starts and the fact that even though yesterday he had, you know, a rough outing, he still struck out eight batters. Yeah. You know, he's striking out a ton of batters recently.
I think a lot of the walks last night, I didn't keep scorecard and didn't look back at it, but it seemed like a lot of them were on full counts.
Mm-hmm. And he did seem to be really fighting off a lot.
And at least, like, you know, it's not like it's a three pitch walk. At least he's got a spot where he can strike him out. I mean, that's my least favorite time to walk a guy, but, you know, at least you're not, you know, 3-1 and walking the guy and just losing him right away. It's just like, okay, you had a shot to come back. It's minor consolation, but it's slight.
So, yeah, I mean,
not worried about him so much right now.
What's your biggest, we talked about Cueto. So from the other four guys, what's your biggest worry, concern heading into the end stretch here and then into October?
I don't know. I mean, Cueto, obviously you want to get him right. And even though I feel like he's going to be okay, that doesn't mean that he will be. So that's concern one. I'm not terribly concerned about like Duffy and Medlin, because I just think that, you know, one of those guys, you're probably going to get through maybe one start in a playoff series from one of those guys, and that's it. And that's all you see them. So it's, you know, I want them to do well and I want them to finish up well, but I don't think it's a disaster if they kind of limp in. You know, I think Volquez is going to be okay. I think Ventura is going to be fine. So those three, I think, carry them, you know, as long as nothing crazy happens. I think that's fine. I am a little iffy on Holland, just because, you know, they say they want to get him more work, but I don't think he's pitched in like 11 days. I mean, even though they've been on a four-game losing streak and they typically want to use him in a save situation, you know, that 12-1 game against the White Sox would have been a nice time to just get him an inning, just to kind of get him back on the mound. And then that way, if tonight you need him, you're not bringing in Holland on 4 days rest. You're bringing Holland in on just a few days rest. And, you know, instead, you know, you have a better feeling of where he might be. So he's kind of a concern, but at the same time, the bullpen is so deep that you don't really need to do that. I mean, I'm just looking at the way they've used Holland, Davis, and Herrera all year. It's kind of strange to what we were used to this time last year. And I have more on that coming on the site later. I'm still working on some research on how they use those guys, and we'll probably talk about that next week. But that's probably the next concern, is Holland and how he's doing. One, because you want to have him available because he's Holland and has experience closing games and things like that. But also, if they're counting on him to close out games and he can't, because that's another worry. Like, what, you know, what happens if they are up 5-2 and he comes in, lets the other team tie it up in the ALDS? Well, then, you know, that's tough. You know, that's one game changes the series so much, and if he can't close it out, then that's a concern. So that's probably my number two concern. And beyond that, I don't know. I mean, I guess the lineup, other than injuries, if the lineup somehow all goes cold at the same time, that's about it. But I kind of feel like this last four games was what you saw. They all just kind of did all the hitting against Detroit, and I don't know. They wore them out or something. They needed to get the rest and come back to it. So those are like my three top concerns right now, I guess, the rest of the year and into the playoffs, which I guess those are pretty general concerns.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's no offense, but I don't think you're breaking any new ground with those concerns. But we talked about
I don't think so either.
We talked about that before, that's a good thing. You know, the Royals have basically had the same, you know, problems for in the last couple months. And while you could argue that, you know, oh, well, that means they haven't fixed them. And while that may be true, that means that, you know, no other, not only have they fixed any other problems they've had, but no new ones have come up, you know. And they did have a better, they didn't have an ace, and they fixed that, you know, theoretically speaking, even though we just talked about Cueto's issues, but they did get Johnny Cueto and they got Ben Zobrist to fill. Now that Gordon's back, you know, that's basically, you know, even one of those problems that still remain once Gordon's back full time and you can really slot him in 100% every day, full games in left field, then, you know, then Zobrist takes one of those problems out, and really you've got the pitching worries, which are more about, you know, consistency and talent type thing versus, you know, actually filling a hole. You know, there's no hole in the pitching. It's just about them getting right. So, mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they're in, you know, they're in a pretty good, in a pretty good spot right now. And, you know, it's good to see that they don't have new problems constantly popping up. And anytime that you think something may be a problem, they've been able to fight through it, like we've talked about before. Injuries to, you know, all the different Moustakas, Kane, Gordon, whoever, you know, they've been able to fight through. And that's been an incredibly positive thing for this Royals. And, you know, tonight, you know, as we mentioned a little bit ago, you know, they're having off to a good start against the Twins. So hopefully, you know, they can maybe get a sweep from the Twins and people will kind of calm down a little bit.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to calm down. It's just, it just takes one win to kind of do it. And then you kind of feel better.
If they win tonight 6-0, 6-1, and then, you know, Volquez goes 6-7 innings, doesn't, you know, gives up, you know, one, maybe two runs or something like that. It's going to go a long way towards calming down the fan base. And, you know, that's one of the things that James Shields did last year that Volquez has really been able to do this year. That, you know, he's come up big in a lot of spots when the rest of the pitching staff hasn't been performing well, and he's stepped up to the plate, metaphorically speaking, the rubber, I should say, and been able to, you know, kind of bring things back and, you know, calm the whole, you know, not just the fans, but I think the organization to a certain extent, to where they say, okay, everything's okay, we got to win now, let's get back in that groove. And they haven't had a ton of problem doing that this year, you know, after they've had a few skids. So we can only hope that is what happens this time.
Yeah. And I think so too. I mean, it's such a loose team. They're so resilient. They've done this kind of stuff all year. I mean, they lost Alex Gordon and they came back, won the game, and then went on a really good run afterwards. So I, you know, if that can't phase them, well, I don't know if anything can.
Yeah. So with that, we took you up by talking you off the ledge, brought you back down with some legit concerns, and now we're leaving you on a high note here. I think we'll end the show today. This is one of our shorter shows, I think. Yeah.
It's still about an hour, but it's still
shorter for us, not shorter for podcasts. But hey, for us, this is a good accomplishment. Unless you like hearing Mike and I ramble for a couple hours, in which case, sorry.
We will gladly, for a fee, show up wherever you want us to and ramble.
That's true. That's true. Preferably Kelly's, where we can get beer.
Absolutely.
But yeah, and we'll have, certainly, as Mike said, we're kind of researching some things that we, unfortunately, life stuff has gotten in the way, so we haven't been able to fully get everything we need to together. But we've got some topics we're gonna talk about in this kind of semi lull, if you will, before the playoffs, as we talked about the Royals having basically the division locked up and most likely the one seed in the playoffs. So not to say that it's not exciting, but Sorry, my dog's going nuts there.
You heard that, it's just that time of year. I mean, the Royals are in a very strange place in that they don't really have to worry about the division, and they can just kind of get everything right. It's very strange.
Very strange, but a welcome strangeness. And some big news-ish. If you are a long-time listener of the show, you know that at one point we were on iTunes, and we then got booted off.
Because
Major League Baseball decided that anybody who had any Major League team's name or reference in their title or description that was not officially affiliated with the team got the boot from the iTunes podcast catalog. So that included us. And if you were really lucky, you saw my pretty face on the news talking about it that night when it happened. But long story short, we're back on. We're back on for sure. Have we had some issues in terms of getting like the most recent shows up? Or
yeah, it happened after our last show. We were able to get the feed reactivated, and that ended up being, it was just essentially gone. And so I think what it did was it just reactivated from the last time that it had ever updated, at least on the site. So like if you're looking on iTunes and you're looking for Kansas City Baseball Vault, it'll pull up some older things. So it'll pull up older shows. But if you're in the actual iTunes program and you look for it, I'm getting mine to load it up fine. So it's got the most recent episode. So
you'll be able to find us.
Yep. There is if you're looking for Kansas City Baseball Vault, there is the initial feed that we used to do back when we were at Union Broadcasting. That one's still kind of hanging out there. We're going to use that more as like an archive. That one has a little 1510 kind of logo on it. So that's how you can distinguish it. Working on getting some updated artwork so that we can go and meet iTunes and Apple's pixel requirements for the artwork. So if you look for Kansas City Baseball Vault, you're going to find two results. One of them is going to have some stuff from like 2012, 2013. But after we get this episode, the one you're listening to now, it should be coming up automatically on your iTunes program and should be online as well. So that's kind of where we are. It's been a battle to kind of get this reactivated, just to contact the right person to get it back in gear. And so pretty excited to be back on there. We've had a lot of people asking us if we were on iTunes, if we're going to be on iTunes, if we're going to be back on iTunes. And for the foreseeable future, we are back on iTunes.
So there we go. That's our big news.
Yep.
For the day. So if you're like one of our listeners, we talked about last show, likes to listen while mowing the lawn, boom, fire up that iTunes app, give the old Kansas City Baseball Vault a search, and you'll find us right there. So with that, I think we'll leave you for this show. We'll be back, of course, as we always try to do. We'll be back next week. And hopefully, instead of a four-game losing streak, we can talk about all five pitchers in the rotation having an incredibly dominant, victorious start through their whole way, and they'll be on a little bit of a winning streak, hopefully. So we will bid adieu to the listeners with that. Thank you all so much for listening. We always, sometimes I feel like I don't say it enough, but I absolutely appreciate every single person that listens. I love all the interaction on Twitter. Anytime you guys send us emails or whatever, we love it. Please keep doing it. Keep sending us stuff. Yep. Keep talking.
If you guys didn't talk to us, we'd just be talking to each other and recording it, and that would be really, really dorky.
Yes, indeed.
And we don't need more dork points.
No, we don't. No. I am maxed out for the foreseeable future on my nerd points. So yeah, absolutely. Thank everyone so much for listening, downloading, supporting the podcast. It really means so much to us that we've been able to do this for 4 years now. We've been able to do this. I've only been, have I been on four?
You were in the ice house.
Was I at the ice house? That was 2011, right? Yeah. It has been 4 years. Wow. So, yeah, I've even been here. So you guys have been doing it for 5 years?
March 2011 was first show.
March 2011. Okay. Yep. And I joined later that season. Okay. Or I guess that would have been the previous season, and then I joined. No. That's
right. No, yours wasn't too far off. I don't.
Yeah, because you were preseason.
A couple months in. Yeah.
And then I joined. Okay. So, yeah. But 4 years we've been able to do this, and it's all because of you guys' support. Thank you so much. Thank you for listening. Thank you for stopping in for this show, the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. For Michael Engel and myself, thanks for stopping. Thanks for stopping by. And as always, go Royals.
Hi, this is Ned Beaudet for Kelly's Westport Inn. Summertime is here, and that means one thing. Your neighbor's cat sneaks over and craps in your garden. No, of course, I'm just joking. Summer also means my neighbor borrowing your boat trailer and driving it into Smithville Lake, or mosquitoes, or your three-year-old drinking the air conditioner water. Haha, I guess what I'm saying here is that summer means different things to different people. And for 65 years, Kelly's Westport Inn has been a vacation for those summer problems ever since Randall Kelly poured his first frosty draft in 1947. 102 degrees and 99% humidity? Don't worry, Kelly's is air conditioned, and the drinks are as cold as ice. And when the heat breaks, Randall's Rooftop is ready for you to kick back, or you can head downstairs for some of the best live music in town. Summer is different things to different people, but to everyone in Kansas City, Kelly's Westport is your summertime bar. I'm Ned Beaudet for Kelly's Westport Inn. We'll leave the taps on for you.